Karen, thanks for joining us tonight. We'd like to welcome everybody tonight to Karen Scholl's Horsemanship for Women teleseminar. So we appreciate all the questions that have been submitted in, and we've selected a few tonight. The topics for this evening are, 1, safe handling techniques, 2, riding without fear, and 3, keeping it interesting, and 4, confidence on the trail. Karen, before we get started, I'd like to read an email that someone sent in, and it says, Karen, it's from Nicole Moss from Mesa, Arizona, and it says, thank you, Karen, for helping me learn how to overcome my fears and gain confidence and keep my big boy major. After your training session at the Arizona Festival at the Horse Expo a few months ago and your first training video, Major and I are back to the riding the trails together, and I'm thrilled with him. You saved me and my boy. Thank you, Nicole. And so we just wanted to share that with you, Karen. We appreciate hearing back from Nicole, and we always like those success stories. And I know there's so many out there, Karen, that you've helped.
Well, that's great, and thanks for reading that, because you know, sometimes I have horses, you know, for a demo, and, you know, I have people for an hour, and, you know, and they go home with maybe a video or something, and then sometimes I don't hear anything. I think, well, I hope that helps, you know.
Yeah.
So it's always wonderful to hear people's success stories. I never get tired of that, because, you know, it's really what motivates me, is that, you know, I love, you know, horses so much, and, you know, I tell people the only thing I love more than horses is people, because it's just the best. It's the best. Okay. I cannot imagine something, you know, more, doing something more rewarding than helping people get along and better with their horses and have more enjoyment and more safety. That's why I do this. So thanks for reading that.
Well, you're welcome. So, and we thank you for taking time out this evening and every month as you do, and the clinics that you go to, and then taking time as well to get the new DVDs out. And if you haven't checked on Karen's site, she's got some wonderful DVDs you need to check out. She's got the new series that's out. And then, more importantly, I'm real excited that the advancing ones will be coming out soon. So I'm putting a push there for those, Karen.
Oh no, they're definitely on. We have them scheduled. So, yeah, they're definitely going, because you know people do. You know, I do get emails and people say, "Man, I'm doing it. It's so great. You know, what's the next part?" I kind of go, "Oh well, you know, use your imagination." And it does. You know, people can do a lot. You know, like yourself, Melinda, you're doing a lot, you know, with the foundation that you've got. But, you know, there's some more things, there's some more aspects to it that are always helpful and valuable. So I'll be capturing that and putting that together for people to continue advancing their skills.
That's great. So we've got quite a bit of background noise, Karen. Are you hearing it as well?
No, I have a new Bluetooth. Does it sound any better now?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that might work. I thought, well, let's address it before we get started here.
Our first
question is on safe handling techniques. And, Karen, this one is a follow-up from last month. And I don't have a name from this particular email, but I'll read you the question, and then if we need to go back and kind of revisit last month's question and kind of hit on that, I can. It says, I asked a question that Mrs. Scholl had addressed at the last teleseminar. She entitled it Skill Level. I have an utmost respect for Ms. Scholl and her skills. I thought about what she said, and I agree with what she said, but I still would like to proceed with the two horses I currently have. I would like to know the answer to my question. Can you tame a horse well just by rubbing him all over with different things every day? Will that calm the horse down enough to be able to touch him with your hands and then start working with him safely? Or do you have to combine it with everything else at the same time, like sitting up on him, walking over poles, etc.? I heard somewhere that the Indians used to rub the horses all over with their hands to tame them. Do you know if this is true? Karen, I don't know if you remember her question from last year, but or not last year, last month. And I went back all year. It's actually just last month.
Okay.
And it was a pretty lengthy one, and You had actually kind of recommended that maybe her skill set wasn't there with the level that it needed to be for the horses and mule that she had. Would you like me to read that to you, or do you recall?
Well, and I think my recommendation was to start developing your skills and expanding your skills with your easiest horse first.
Right.
Is that it? Yeah. And,
yeah.
And you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, she's got your Fix-It series DVDs. And if you remember that, she is a beginner. And it's a 4-year-old mare mule. And then there's a 12-year-old gelding Appaloosa. And the mule has
right.
never been broke and is pretty wild. And the Appaloosa is supposedly green broke, but she's not been able to touch him at all.
Well, you know what that well, and I appreciate the desire, you know, to say these are the animals I have and this is where I'm going to go. And I know that people want to hear that, you know, okay, go ahead, you know, good luck. But you know what? And that's where I said, you know, if you'd asked me this a number of years ago, I would have said, you know, yes, absolutely, you can make this work and make this happen. But, you know, there have just been too many people that, you know, it is true that you can develop your skills and you can have success in the scenario that you're describing. You can if you do what I recommend that you do. And that's why I don't answer it the way that I do anymore, because I can count on one hand how many people did what I suggested that they should do. You know, there is, you know, and so many people, they go along and I've helped them thinking I'm helping them and it does go well. And then they kind of go, okay, I don't need to take your advice anymore. We're good. And then I get messages and emails after the fact, maybe years. Yeah. Well, I ended up in the hospital. And I don't mean just once or twice. I mean multiple. And that just breaks my heart. But at the same time, they're saying, I ended up in the hospital, but at the same time, I didn't really do what you suggested that I do. So if I found somebody or came across somebody that said, you know, I'm going to follow your recommendation for success, I would give you that recommendation for success. But to be perfectly honest, out of the thousands of people that I give advice to, you know, giving advice is one thing. You know, people taking it, you know, is another. My apprentice, Stephanie Lindsley in Colorado, and Stephanie, if you're listening tonight, I know you won't mind my sharing this. You know, she, you know, came to some clinics with a nice horse. She was 12 years old. She had a nice gentle horse. You know, she was really developing her skills, and I mean, she went from zero to things are going pretty well, and then I get a message that she went down and to the BLM auction and bought a pregnant BLM mare. And I had to kind of go, okay, I'll say a prayer for her, and, you know, and she put in the time. She slept, you know, at the barn. I mean, she put in thousands of hours and, you know, all these things, and she went through ups and downs and everything all around, and, you know, now she can ride the mare bareback and jump and, you know, do all these things. That doesn't mean other people can ride this mare. And, you know, we had a discussion here recently, and she said, you know, I've decided, you know, she goes to the Mustang, you know, she competed in the youth division of the Mustang Makeover, and, you know, she's done these things. And she said, you know, Karen, she said, I've really had to honestly look at this. And she said, I need to go a different track than the Mustangs, because I show up with this wonderful Mustang and people look at her and go, I'm going to go get a Mustang. Or they say to her, well, you come over and spend an hour and tell me everything that you've learned, you know, because you show me how to train the Mustang. And the real answer she should give people is at the time she got the Mustang, she'd ridden, participated in probably 7 clinics over several years. And you know, that's the real answer. How do you get skilled enough to handle a special needs horse? And the answer is that, you know, you make the I don't want to say the effort, because everybody has the effort, you know, for the desire, but you make it happen. If the desire is high enough, you will make it happen to develop your skill level to a point that you have something to offer a horse like this. And she actually said, she said, really, I can't be an example for the Mustang part of the industry because people misconstrue it. And she said, I feel like, you know, people are going to go get into trouble because of my wonderful example with my horse. Because, you know, everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And so that's why I answer the things the way that I do. And, you know, she's a wonderful student and, you know, somebody that I consider, you know, an apprentice to me. She's doing an internship with me. And she will never stop. She just flew down from Denver this last weekend to participate in a clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona. You know, she has held multiple clinics because she arranged it because she didn't have the money to, you know, participate in the clinic. So she did all the arrangements. And so she was able to ride, you know, not for, you know, cash that she didn't have, but for the effort that she put together, you know, to pull the clinic together. So, you know, she's a person that, you know, is a good example of that kind of scenario where she had a high level of desire, but to the level that she needed. I mean, she has put in the time and the effort, and, you know, every time from the very first clinic she rode with me, and then she was 12 years old, 12, you know, I don't want to say a child. She was, you know, very mature for, you know, a 12-year-old at the time, but I'd come back, you know, months or a year later, and I couldn't believe what she did, you know, with the information that she had from the last time I saw her. So, and she continues to do that. So, you know, if I say, okay, well, go out and touch the horse with your hands and go out with different objects and here's how the Indians, you know, did it and, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, you could do that and it could go well, but maybe not. And how can I teach you over a teleseminar, you know, what to do in the situation that you're in? So if I answered it any other way, I feel like I really wouldn't be giving you my honest answer, which I won't do. I'm at an age where it's like, you know, even though the truth may not be what you want to hear and you may prove me wrong, bless your heart, you know, send me a note a year from now and ride off happily in the sunset on these two horses, horse and a mule, that's great. I'd love for you to prove me wrong. But I have not been proven wrong over many, many years, you know, of doing this. And like I said, the only thing I love more than horses is people. And I just won't participate in people, you know, getting into trouble by my saying, you know, yeah, go for it and, you know, rub them all over and this is how you do it. It's just, it's not where it starts for the majority of people. Now, I know people who have gone out and got, you know, same scenario, same situation. Another gentleman in Colorado, and again, a Mustang proponent, couldn't touch the Mustang. Everything went really well. He took no lessons, no guidance, no anything. He's a very well-known photographer in Colorado. Does beautiful work, you know, with Mustangs and wilderness photos, Claude Spielman. And he told me the same thing. He said, you know, because he was going along really well with his Mustang. Never came to a clinic. He came and watched, but he never brought a horse to a clinic. And he said, well, Karen, how come I'm going along so well with this Mustang? And I said, well, you're what I describe as unencumbered by knowledge. He just went out there and didn't know he couldn't do it. You know, so there's examples like that. So, you know, everything went really well. And then he said, well, it happened well with one Mustang, so I'll get another one. And then he sent me photos of his injuries that, you know, were extremely severe, and he ended up, you know, not being able to do it. And, you know, so the scenario can start off and everything's all good and rainbows and butterflies, and then maybe not. So I can't really answer that question in the way that it seems like the person wants me to, because there really isn't an answer like that. If you start off with the easiest horse first, develop your skills and ability with a horse that that is touchable, that is writable, you can develop your skills to a level that one day you would be able to have the skill set to be able to step into a special needs, you know, situation like you're describing with the other two animals. And that's the truth of it. I don't know how else to answer that and be true to myself and really give you the best advice that'll keep you the safest. And, you know, I'd love for you to be bugging me about this question a year from now. But if I answer it another way, you may not. I mean, that's just the honest truth of it. So,
Karen, I remember something you said in a clinic one time, and it, when I was reading this, it kind of went back into my memory bank a little bit. But you said something to the effect, you don't know what you don't know till you know it. And so there's so much information out there about horses and what to do, you know, and that's why even at the Hoosier Horse Fair, we've stopped doing the colt starting clinics because most people don't have any business being at that level and doing that. Those are professionals out there that start those, and there's so much that goes along with that. So, but that was just something I remember you saying, that, you know, you don't even know what you don't know, you know.
Here's a wonderful little thing, you know, horses teach riders and riders teach horses. And the stage that's being described right here is in the stage of horses teach riders. I mean, it's the thing of somebody buys their child a colt. You know, how many times have we heard that? You know, I talked about it in the clinic this weekend. You know, people, oh, he's 5 years old and we're going to buy him a colt so they can grow old together. Well, they're not going to grow. They may not grow old together. You know,
yeah.
Buy a puppy for a child, not a colt. You know, but we've all heard it in the horse industry. You hear of these scenarios. And people who are professionals hear these scenarios so consistently. And it really is, you know, people don't know what they don't know. Me too. When I bought my first horse, I bought the wrong horse. I bought a horse I found out a year later. She'd been ridden 6 times when I bought her. Now, I am living proof that God takes care of fools and children. And I was too old to be one of them. I was in my early 20s when that happened. But I didn't even know to ask somebody, you know, how many times has this horse been ridden? And in hindsight, that horse, who was touchable and brushable and rideable, you know, in by some standards, you know. But, you know, honestly, it's almost better for those horses to leave them alone, have, you know, for a period of time while you develop your skill set, you know, with an easier horse. And, you know, I'm sorry if that's bad news or you don't want to hear that, but I don't know many professionals who would tell you otherwise. And if they do tell you otherwise, I don't know what their motivation might be, or maybe, you know, they just haven't. I don't know any professionals personally that would give you advice other than what I've shared with you to the best of my ability. You know, and I'm sorry to give that, you know, if that's not, you know, what you're looking for. But if I tell you, oh, yes, you can just put them online and touch them all over and these kind of things, I mean, it's just not going to put you in the right situation, you know. And if I did say, okay, that, you know, if I took the horses, that might be a 12-month project for me at my level, you know. So, and I've only been doing this, I haven't been doing this for very long. It's been about 23 years now. So, you know, well, actually it's longer than that. It's about 30 years now. I think about it. I got to add on, you know, more years. But, you know, that's something for a professional to do. And if you, like you originally said, you can't afford a professional. If you can't do that, to say, how do you bring your skills up to speed? That's a tough one. And if you, it's not like any other hobby. If you're not good at playing guitar or knitting or golfing or, you know, just about anything else, even with dogs, if you weren't skilled with dogs and decided to go get some rescue dogs, I mean, most of those dogs, you know, they jump a fence or dig under a fence or, you know, dig up the petunias. You know, most dogs are not, you know, have a pattern of behavior that it can hurt or, you know, seriously harm or kill. Although you do see examples of it in, you know, shows like The Dog Whisperer. But you know, with horses, if from the scenario you're describing, that's a 1,200-pound prey animal that if you're not clearing your communication, you know, you could just walk up to pet it one day and it could, you know, I've just seen too many, you know, crazy things under the best of circumstances, you know. But the circumstance you're describing is not an ideal circumstance for you to be developing your skill set in. That's just the truth of it, in my opinion. Maybe somebody would disagree. I don't know who that would be.
Yeah.
But I'd love to discuss it with him. If you find him, I'll be happy to discuss it with him.
Yeah. Well, Karen, that's what we appreciate, you know, the straightforward, honest answer, you know, that's going to keep everybody as safe as possible and be around to hear several more teleseminars. So we appreciate that. So, and we hope that she listens and takes that to heart. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and we'll move on then, Karen. Our second question is Ride Without Fear. And this one comes from Darlene Nelson. And she's been up here at some of your clinics here in Indiana and went out to Missouri with us. And she's actually got a new horse, the Rocky Mountain. And so she's going from a quarter horse now into a gated horse type situation. And her question is, what are some ways to overcome the fear of going fast while trail riding with a group that tends to move out on the trail? I feel like I'm always slowing the group because I become nervous with the quick pace. I'm new to gated horses, and the Rocky I ride is calm, but likes to keep up with the group. He feeds off of my fear, and I've always had a real calm trotting horse in the past. So she's wanting to know how to overcome that.
Well, here's another answer of truth. Be very particular about who you ride with. You know, if the group that you're riding with is not conducive to you advancing your skills and building your confidence with horses, you know, maybe they're the group that you should ride with, you know, a year from now or a couple years from now when you have developed that. So, you know, some things that you can do to develop that, it's nice that you have a gated horse because, you know, you're dealing with, you know, increased speed but without the type of motion that makes a lot of people feel like they're becoming unseated. So when gated horses go faster, usually it's quite a bit smoother than, I want to say, a non-gated horse because, you know, I ask people who ride a gated horse, and, you know, a few people, they'll raise their hand, and I'll remind people, you know, walk, trot, canter are gates. Those are gates. So who rides a gated horse? And then people go, oh, okay, we all ride gated horses. You know, but the term gated means that there's additional movements, patterns of movement in addition to a walk, trot, and a canter. I have not seen a gated horse that cannot canter. You can turn a gated horse loose in a field, and they will bomb around with the rest of them. So, you know, sometimes what happens in groups, and this is just a guess on my part, when people get gated horses, they tend to ride with people that also have gated horses, and the tendency is to just get out there on the trail, put them into gate, and off we go. And they tend to stay at a pretty fast clip because the gate is so smooth. And so, you know, what would be a trail ride of just walking, you know, like an old cow pony, kind of turns into a, you know, something where your pigtails are flying backwards the entire time. And not everybody's comfortable with that. Even on a gated horse, it's, you know, usually very smooth. Something that I encourage people to do to develop confidence in, you know, faster gates, either a walk, trot, pace, you know, single foot, canter, those kind of things, is go into a round pen. And even if you don't have a round pen where you're at, usually you can get to a facility or, you know, and pay a day fee. You know, you can go in. A lot of facilities allow people to come in and use the facilities for $10 a day or $15 a day or get down to, you know, a public riding facility that has a round pen. And go into a round pen and just try on a loose rein to just allow the horse to go around a round pen and just feel what that feels like. You know, if you need to blow them up, just blow them up and, you know, and drop in just a loose rein and have a passenger ride. Just see what that feels like, you know, on your horse. What you may find is when the horses go into some of those faster gates, what, you know, we may be afraid of the speed, but once we feel that, you know, sometimes people go along and they trot for years and years and years, never tip into a canter. And they may have been told the canter's much easier to ride than a trot, but we never go there because that speed ring, you know, makes us uncomfortable. But once people go into kind of a controlled environment, then people can feel it, and they feel, you know, the horse, where's the horse going to go? This is pretty much going to go in a circle. Sorry, I'm getting some background noise from somebody. I don't know if everybody's muted.
Okay. If you're not muted, do a star six. Not you, Karen, but the...
Not me.
Yeah, don't you do that.
And here's another thing, is practice making those transitions, not with a group of horses, because horses tend to get more connected to the group than to you. That's not the place to do the training. That's, you know, you should be able to, you know, ride with, you know, a group of horses leaves, and you could go along and your horse walk like an old cow pony until you ask it to go. You know, that's your ultimate communication. But there are a lot of steps to take you to that level of communication. Not many people are at a stage that they can do that. So, you know, people get out there and they get in a group and the horses get caught up in each other's energy and the motion and the movement. They want to move as a herd. That's a really strong instinct. It's a strong survival instinct. And unless you have a very high level of leadership where your horse perceives you as being the lead among this group, they look at the rest of the group of horses and they go, you are all beneath the leader that's with me up on my back right now. You know, that's your ultimate. And that's what we aspire to. But if you're not at that stage, and you don't feel comfortable with it, don't put yourself in that scenario. It's okay to decline people's, you know, invitation to ride. And I encourage that with people, too, where, you know, people are going on a group ride. We've been looking forward to it all week. Get out there. Your horse isn't right. You know, this isn't right. And sometimes we get peer pressure. People think, oh, it'll be good. Just come on. You know, they all want you to go. If you don't feel right about it, do not put your precious self up on that animal's back and go off just because somebody else says you're okay. You know, you can feel in your gut if you're going to be okay or not. And if you're not going to enjoy your ride, just say, hey, I'll be here cooking hot dogs for when you get back. You know, I'll keep the sodas cold. Or, you know, you be the person to just, you know, participate, but, you know, without putting yourself at risk or, you know, extending your fear. And that's what other people don't always understand. People who don't experience the kind of fear that you are don't understand it, and they don't understand really how to help you. So if you want to prepare for building your confidence in that way, you know, get into a round pen situation when you feel comfortable making those transitions up and down. And when I have people in my clinic, if they feel comfortable tipping it up into a canter, I tell them, you know, just canter a few strides, two or three strides, and then practice bending one rein down to a stop and just doing those gradual transitions. If you can ride the transitions, then the various gates feel more comfortable. The transitions are the most challenging part for people to ride well. So you need to do a lot of them. And pretty soon the horse says, you know, this is a big thing. You know, people say tip their horse into a canter, and then the horse knows, okay, well, I'm going to canter around this arena about 1.5 times, and if I hurry up, we'll get done faster. You know, what I have people do is transition up. The horse starts making the assumption that they're going to go charging around there, and then I say, okay, now transition down to a trot, up to a canter, down to a trot, up to a canter, down to a trot again. Pretty soon, the horse says, well, I don't know why I'm going so fast at the canter. She's going to have me trot here in a minute. And so the horse is able to start calibrating, not anticipating, but to be really responsive to what you're asking it to do. And that's another really important part, and it's something that's ideal to do by yourself in a small area. As you get more confident, go to, you know, a slightly larger area and then a bigger area. And when you feel comfortable that you have that kind of communication and all of those needs and all those variations within all the gates of the Rocky Mountain Horse, you know, then you'd feel comfortable going out with a group. And even if your horse at that point does get caught up with the other horses and they're going faster than maybe what you would want, you know, you're still going to feel more comfortable at those higher speeds than you are right now. So there's a wonderful video. It's from my television series, and it's Trail Etiquette. And it'd be a really nice thing for you to get. It comes with two other episodes. There are three episodes per video. And maybe have the people you ride with watch that as well. There are some other exercises that other people, if they understand this approach, they can help you help develop your horse's ability to rate itself, not, you know, run up behind another horse. And kind of trail etiquette, some people don't know to run past other, you know, that they shouldn't run past other horses, that when people go through a gate, people should wait until people, there's all kinds of things that, you know, I wish people knew before they just went out on a trail ride. But most people, that, you know, they get a horse and they go, come on, let's go, and, you know, they just don't understand how many aspects of trail riding there are to know and to learn. In fact, the person that helped me shoot that video is a lifetime horsewoman, and when we got done shooting the video, she said to me, Karen, I learned things shooting this video that I'd never heard anybody talk about before. And she's been riding her horse, you know, horses her whole life. It's very accomplished as a horsewoman. She's a coach for people, has ridden competitively. She's a highly skilled horsewoman, but she just hadn't heard all those aspects of trail riding because that's not something a lot of people talk about. You know, you just trail ride. You get on, keep a leg on each side, go the same speed, and, you know, hopefully everybody has fun at the end of the trail ride. But what you're describing is you're not having fun. So maybe take a break from riding with that particular group, build your confidence, share that trail riding DVD with some other people and say, hey, can you help me? I'm going to be doing this. This is a little project for me and my horse, you know, and a month from now or 3 months or if it takes a year or 2 years, 5 years, I don't care. But just, you know, progress towards that, to what that ultimate is that I described earlier. And I'd love to hear back from you and, you know, tell me how it's going.
Okay. Well, thank you, Karen, for answering that. And thank you, Dolly. And we'll probably be seeing her at the Fusion Horse Fair so she can kind of follow up at that point. So,
oh, good.
And just real quick, if you're in Indiana or nearby the Midwest, Karen will be here in Indiana for the Hoosier Horse Fair, and that's April 13th, 14th, and 15th. So we'd love you to have you come out and watch Karen. She's got several demonstrations throughout the weekend, and so those I'm sure will be wonderful to come in and watch. So Karen, we'll go on and move to the third question. It's keeping it interesting, and this is from Terry. It says, first, I want to say that I was finally able to order the Confidence Series DVD 3-pack last week. I am so excited and can't wait for it to arrive. My horse is boarded at a wonderful backyard barn and has 24/7 turnout with 7 other horses. We've been at this barn for almost a year, and this has helped both my spookiness level as well as that of my horse. We were previously in a bad place. He is like a whole new boy, and I'm making a lot of progress getting over my fears, and I'm able to work with him on almost a daily basis with some guidance for moral support. I am hoping to be able to work more on my own by springtime and actually get back on and ride. My problem is I think my horse is getting a little bored with my just walking him around and brushing him. We have no round pen or arena, nor do we have a place large enough to do any lunge work except for the paddock where the other horses are. But half of it is not usable due to the tremendous amount of mud that we have right now. There are trails, but cleanup work from the October storm Alfred is still underway. Lots of limbs everywhere, and I do not feel safe walking too far in there just yet. We work behind the run-in and the large yard, but it is not fenced in, and there are some trees and bushes in the way keeping us from lunging there. I like to try kicking around the jolly ball, but I'm not sure that would be a safe thing, trying where we are not fenced in. Other than placing some logs or pipes around to walk over, what types of things can we do to continue our rebonding process? Thank you, Terry.
Well, you're asking me a facility question. It's kind of
kind
of hard to go, well, you know, something that's, I mean, everything that you can imagine, you know, and something that's really nice for folks. I'm sorry, I'm still getting talking in the background. There's somebody that's not quite muted.
Yeah, if anyone could do a star six, if you've come in later and haven't done a star six, please do so now.
Yeah. And I can't tell if I heard something distinct in the background, I could say. So if you don't think you're muted, please hit star six. Because the talking in the background is just a little distracting. Thanks. So, you know, it's more of a facility or an environmental question. But in the paddock, you know, with the other horses, you know, a lot of people are in that scenario where, you know, there's not a lot of room, there's not a lot of, you know, space, or, you know, during, you know, this time of year, it's a lot of moisture and mud and that kind of thing. I don't mind doing things in a paddock around a group of horses, because it gives you an opportunity to have the other horses stay away. So, you know, when you're, you know, doing the circling and the things that are on, like, the cornerstone for communication and riding from the ground, you know, if you don't feel, you know, comfortable riding, you know, riding with a group of horses is a little bit different. But when you're on the ground doing circling and, you know, transitions and all those kinds of things, you know, teaching other horses to stay away in the pasture, you know, isn't always a bad thing. So I don't mind, you know, people going out and doing things, you know, out in the paddock with a group of horses, because when those horses come into your space that you're using, you just use rhythmic pressure, just like you're doing with your horse, rhythmic pressure until they get out of your personal space, and then leave them alone. And what's really amazing, you'll see people, you know, doing some stuff with their horse in pasture, and the other horses are all kind of standing around watching, like you have a little audience of horses, you know, kind of going, oh, that's kind of neat, you know. So that's that, to me, from the scenario that you're describing, you know, sounds ideal. Another thing that you can do that's a lot of fun with horses and has a lot of variety to it is get a blow-up ball, you know. And there's things that you can get online, you know, that are heavy-duty rubber balls, or you can go down to, you know, stores and pick up yoga balls, you know, the balls that are for yoga or Pilates and those kind of things, for exercise balls. Those really work pretty well. And I came across, I haven't seen them for years. I'm the one that's in the toy department at the store looking for goofy, you know, crazy things, you know, swimming pool noodles and, you know, all kinds of things to set up, you know, for horses, to mess around with horses, tarps, blow-up balls. But I came across in the department store some blow-up balls that they blow up inside of fabric. So it has a fabric cover. And when you use that, you know, you have the horse online, and you can make little goals. You know, you can have the horse push it there and push it there, see if they can put a foot on it, you know, touch their nose to it. You know, Melinda, you've done all kinds of things with your horses, teaching your horse all kinds of tricks and sitting on bean bags. And, you know, the limit is really to your imagination. So, you know, and that kind of goes back to the other thing I was describing, is see if there isn't a facility nearby that you can pay a daily use fee, just a day fee. Just come in. They're usually very reasonable. You can come in, use an indoor covered arena, you know, where it's dry, and just get in and get some time, you know, with your horse. You can set up jumps. I mean, just use all kinds of, you know, use tires and, you know, I find old mattresses, you know, and, you know, with it being saved, don't, if it's got holes in it and the horse is going to put feet into the springs or something, don't use it. But, you know, just imagine what kind of obstacles you can set up and, you know, teach your horse to, you know, move and negotiate and navigate those kinds of obstacles, and then challenge yourself and say, okay, can I do it from the left side of my horse, from the right side of the horse, maybe even from behind the horse? Can I have the horse back through it, sideways over it? You know, the sky's the limit. So when you see the communication you can have from the cornerstone of communication riding from the ground, then you just start activating your imagination. If you have trouble with imagination, just borrow, you know, bring the kids out or borrow somebody's kids and, you know, set up games, make up all kinds of games, make a race, you know, see if you can have a backup race between, you know, make a figure eight around two barrels or two sticks or two rocks. You know, you don't have to have anything fancy or expensive or anything like that to make something more interesting and more challenging for your horse. So I talked about this on Facebook last week, and there might be some suggestions for you on there as well. So check that out.
Something I've seen you use that you haven't mentioned yet is for the bubble of comfort, using the hula hoop and kind of, you know, having that around the horse.
Hula hoop.
I mean, that doesn't take a lot of room.
Mm-hmm. Strings. Go down to Walmart and walk through the toy department. You'll see me down there. You know, I'm walking out with armfuls of hula hoops and water wiggles and, you know, every kind of goofy, you know, thing that you can imagine. You know, and set up tarps, hang up tarps, and I put ropes up above and hang a tarp, you know, so that the horse has to push under it and between it and through it and, you know, all kinds of things. I was in a pet store today and I was looking in the book section and I was pulling out, you know, there's tons of books on dog tricks and I'm sitting there looking at it, you know, for dog tricks and I'm like, ooh, a horse could do that. Oop, a horse could do that. A horse could do that. So, you know, your inspiration is all around you. Just trust yourself and get creative and be goofy and, you know, go out there and have some fun.
Okay. So, well, she's got a lot of things on her to-do list now. So, Carrie, good luck with
that.
And start having a little bit of fun. So, thanks for submitting that question to us. So, we've got one last question here, and it's confidence on the trail. And it says, hi, Karen, do you have any suggestions on how to get my horse out on the trail by himself? We go out a little each time, but his confidence is just not the best yet. I can't keep him focused. We stop and we work around obstacles. I move his feet, but it's just not enough. Any ideas? Thanks, Jody.
Okay. Usually when a horse loses confidence, it's because they don't view the individual that they're with as being in a true leadership position. So my question then becomes, you know, to what extent has there been study either participating in a clinic or using the confidence series of DVDs? So if you look on my website, there's, you know, the leadership series, which is on the ground. Confidence series has that plus the writing part. And then there's a trust series that gives you the full set of tools, all the DVDs, you know, all the educational DVDs and that such. So kind of in answer to your question, whenever you go into a situation where the horse loses confidence, the response is then it's your opportunity to demonstrate leadership. And if you've gone through the series of DVDs, you'll know what I'm talking about with that, and you'll know how to do it. So to kind of explain it, you know, is redundant and actually quite impossible with the amount of time that we have. But basically, when a horse loses confidence, it's because they don't picture the person in the position of leadership. So, for example, in the clinic this weekend, when we were in the riding part of things, you know, whether a horse, you know, walks off while mounting or, you know, looking to the other horses or wanting to bond, you know, or get attached to another horse or, you know, fill in the blank, you know, or just gets bothered or confused. You know, taking the hindquarters away when they're up on their back, you know, disengaging the hindquarters, if you understand that term and know how to demonstrate that. That leadership position is what happens before you even leave the barn, you know, when you go away from the barn. You know, and it is about having the horse, you know, move through obstacles or, you know, keep their attention around this or challenge that. But to be honest, if a horse wants to be somewhere else or feels safer somewhere else, all the little drills and things and around a tree and back and all that, you know, a horse can do that kind of with one leg tied behind his back, you know. So sometimes we think, okay, well, I'm going to get out here, I'm going to be in this situation, I'm going to keep their interest by going around trees and over, you know, step over a log or through a, you know, fill in the blank. But with a horse that feels distressed about being away from a place that it feels safe or the individuals it feels safe with, those kind of things may not be enough for that horse to feel safe with you. So going back to the ground, you know, even if you get out in a situation and you get to a certain point, if you don't feel comfortable, disengaging the hindquarters or demonstrating leadership up on the horse's back, you know, step down on the ground and reassert yourself with the ground skills. And that's the beauty of the ground skills. That was a big question that, you know, folks have when they arrive in the clinic. And Gal asked that, you know, because we, during our lunch times at clinic, that's our discussion time. That's our, processing time. And one of the questions, you know, there was a gal that said, you know, I don't understand that. How does that translate up onto the horse's back? And the real answer is if the horse doesn't understand you enough to respect you on the ground, then how would the horse understand and respect you when they're under saddle? You know, now, people who are highly skilled can develop the kind of communication and leadership and assert themselves up on the horse's back, and not even when they get afraid, but especially when a horse gets afraid. They can help that horse have confidence in them because they have the kind of skill set that a horse understands, respects, and responds to. But depending on the stage that you're at and the situation that you're in, you know, you may feel more comfortable stepping down on the ground and doing the things that you saw on either the cornerstone for communication or riding from the ground. And you can do those things out on the trail. You know, sometimes people up on the horse's back, you know, we become more timid. We don't want to, we don't feel comfortable asserting ourselves from up on the horse's back because we don't know what the horse is going to do. And if the horse is confused, they can take off and take the bit and, you know, put their chin on their chest and run all the way home. You know, they absolutely can do that. So don't put yourself at risk. If you feel uncomfortable, step down off that horse. And I like to, say this every chance I get, because there's a common misunderstanding that, you know, if you're having trouble with a horse, people say, don't get off that horse because then the horse wins. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't know where anybody posts the current, you know, yearly standings of that competition. You know, the horse isn't about winning. The horse is trying to express that it's confused. It's confused in your communication or what's being asked of it, and it wants to get back to a place that it feels safe. Now, when you step off a horse, it doesn't mean you step off them, you know, walk them home, give them a bucket of oats. You know, you will pattern a behavior. You know, I ask people, how many times does it take to give a kid a candy bar in a grocery store before you have a problem? You know, one time. But if you step down and you have the kind of tools that I describe in the DVDs where you can set up to have a lead line with you on the trail, then you're prepared to reassert yourself with your ground skills. And then when the horse looks at you again and says, oh, you're making the decisions here, you're asserting yourself, I recognize you in the leadership position, and the horse will actually relax, then you can step on and go on your merry way. And that was a hard thing. It took me years and years and years to get over that thing of, well, I can't get off him because then he'll win. But at the same time, I don't feel confident enough to assert leadership up on the horse's back. It doesn't mean to be punishing or anything like that. So it kind of goes back to the entire program of, you know, how do we present ourselves in such a way that the horse recognizes our quality of leadership without feeling threatened to a point where it needs to get out of there, you know, get out of Dodge and get back to where, you know, it feels comfortable and safe. You know, horses are prey animals, so they're on the food chain. And even though we know we're not going to eat them or harm them, they don't know that. And so being a prey animal, their instinct, their survival instinct is to get back to a place and around the individuals that they feel safe. So, you know, this is another thing I asked in the clinic this weekend. You know, I asked for a show of hands who's ever been frustrated because their horse, you know, it's called barn sour, but it really should be called barn sweet because they're not sour on the barn, they're sweet on the barn, you know, and they're sour on what we're doing or we're asking of them or how we're asking it. And so here's the opportunity is to say, okay, I recognize where the limitation is. Now, how do I go about that to change that horse's mind about me or what I'm asking of it or how I'm asking it? And that is our skill set. That's expanding our skill set to be able to hold that horse's interest and attention. Oftentimes it's the opposite of how we would think it would be. You know, so when you're describing, well, I'm going over little obstacles and I'm stepping over this and I'm trying to keep the horse's attention over here. A horse that's afraid and fearful for its life, I've not found that to be effective. You know, the other one is people say, well, circle him until he gets tired. Well, good luck with that. You know, a horse is designed to go 20 miles in a day. And so I see people on trail rides and they'll circling, thinking, well, I'm going to wear him out. And all that does is when the horse goes into forward motion and it's in a fearful mental state, it's just running away in a smaller area, which might kind of work. I haven't found that it does. To me, it's figure out how to establish that foundation so strongly that when you go somewhere else, you take that foundation with you. And even if the horse gets frazzled, you know, as they will, they're living, breathing, thinking, feeling creatures. But if you have such a strong foundation, you go somewhere else and say it unravels on you a little bit, you know right away how to go about it to have that horse re-engage to your qualities of leadership and reasserting yourself. And I'm very specific about that. It's not aggressive. It's not punishing. It's not get her done. It's not any of that. It's how do you assert your qualities of leadership so that the horse can relax and turn over the responsibility to you. That's something that we will spend a lifetime aspiring to. Yeah. So it's kind of a big answer to what would seem like a simple question, but, you know, to me it's not just stepping over a rock or circling and those kinds of things. It's a bigger answer, you know, to something that's, I wish there was a quick fix to that, you know, but it's a lasting fix. It's something that has a depth of understanding between you and the horse. So I used to hold in my mind, even when you're scared, look to me for leadership. But I've changed that in recent years. Especially when you're scared, look to me for leadership. I want my horse to go along and go, hey, Karen, I don't know about this. And I go, hey, it's all right. And they go, okay. She says it's okay. And she's proven to me in all these scenarios, from whether it's picking up their feet or feeding time or leading them, you know, horsemanship is a big subject. Riding the horse is one sliver of this subject called horsemanship. And yet there's so little attention on all those other things. You know, if all those other things are right, man, riding will come good. You know, but most of our instruction traditionally in the horse industry is about how to equitate, you know, better than the other people in the arena to get a ribbon or equitate enough to be able to feel safe on a trail ride or, you know, fill in the blank. But how a horse rides, you know, how your communication is from up on the horse's back is in direct relation to the level of communication and leadership that you have and demonstrate with your horse, you know, in every single interaction. That's why my program is about horsemanship. It's a big, broad subject. But it's something that you can change your mind. I mean, that was the message that Melinda read in the very beginning of tonight's teleseminar, is somebody who came for an hour-long demo, got one DVD, and sending an email going, oh, my gosh, you know, everything's turned around, everything's changed, just because there were some missing, you know, pieces of information that a lot of, you know, people in the horse industry just don't recognize as being, you know, so intrinsic to this communication between a human and a horse. So that's my recommendation, to get the set of DVDs, study that, practice that, get that foundation of communication so the horse has a better chance of understanding a new clarity of communication that we offer. They understand, then they can respect it, and they can respond to it.
Okay. Well, Jody, we thank you for submitting that question. So, and as we've got people that are submitting questions, if we're not getting to yours right away, you might go online to Karen's website, because many of the questions that we're seeing coming in have been addressed in a previous fellow seminars. So if you're not able to wait until we get to it again, you might go onto Karen's website, go through it, shows the different topics, and you can click on it and find the particular one that you're in need of at that time, and go ahead and take a listen to it, because what we find out is there's several people in the same type of situation looking for that same answer. So, well, Karen,
and that's the thing. You know, I really want to encourage people is to, you know, listen to these teleseminars. I mean, people are listening tonight, and people will listen to this download. But go back and listen to them. We've been doing these for several years now, every month. And so there are huge, you know, hours and hours of these different subjects. And even if it's a subject that doesn't seem to relate to what you think you need right now, you'll really be amazed. You'll listen to something that seems completely unrelated, but in your mind it'll translate. You know, that message of how to deal with, you know, what seemed like an unrelated, you know, topic, you're going to go, oh, you know what, I have it. I can see how I can apply it in this scenario. Because, you know, I'm not describing anything new or different, and people who hear my DVDs or see my clinics or listen to teleseminars, you can hear the same foundation in that communication in almost every answer. And everything, to me, really comes back to developing our skills at communication. I started off the clinic this weekend, and I said, you know, and actually somebody had turned a horse loose in a paddock, and we kind of watched that horse, and we watched that horse do flying lead changes, fly stops, you know, prancing, doing like a little, not piaf, but probably more like a passage, high-level dressage maneuvers. It was pretty little yellow quarter horse going around doing, you know, all these things. It walked, it trotted, it cantered, it, you know, took off, it made a turn like a barrel horse. I mean, you know, it did all these really amazing things just playing. And everybody looked at that and they said, so are we really training a horse to do something that it's not already physically capable of doing? And then the mind starts making that shift to say, oh, okay, what we're doing is developing our ability to get our idea across in such a way that the horse understands it, respects it, and then can respond to it. I've not met a horse that does not, or a person, or a child, or a dog that really doesn't want to do what's being asked of it if it's clearly asked and expressed with respect and responded to with appreciation. You know, most everybody's been in an employee situation. Doesn't that sound like the ideal employer? You know, so how do we develop our skills to be able to do that? And here's the good news. Leadership is a learnable skill. Even the most timid person, somebody who's very timid by nature, you can understand this from a horse's point of view and develop your confidence to, you know, develop those skills, those qualities of leadership from a horse's point of view. Horses have a very clear communication structure or herd hierarchy amongst them. They learn it and experience it on their first day of life. So if we can understand that and examine it and learn to emulate that, it's really amazing how quickly horses they're happy to do what's being asked of them. They say, oh, I'd be glad to do that. Why didn't you say so? But it's just developing our skills to be able to do that. So it's simple, but it doesn't mean that it's easy. And it's a lifetime of learning to develop that with never an end in sight. You know, in my opinion, I'm continuing to learn myself. And everybody who's that I know of who is highly skilled with horses has two qualities. And that's a high level of curiosity and a high level of humility. Because with horses, you know, if you've had horses for any amount of time, when you think you know something about horses, that's about the time you're going to find out what you don't know. So, you know, it's a lifetime of learning. And if you enjoy the learning process and enjoy listening to health seminars and watching DVDs and going out and practicing and, oh, man, I messed up today, so what, I'll be better tomorrow. You know, just get out there and have fun with your horse and really just do the best that you can. And to me, what I see, you know, we had such a wonderful clinic last weekend, as all the clinics are. But, you know, I saw all these horses really appreciating that the people were even trying. You know, when even if people are fumbling around in ropes and sticks and I don't know what I'm doing, the horse is like, well, you're not very good, but I do appreciate that you're trying. And then all of a sudden they'll have a breakthrough and the horse responds. And you can see it all just kind of click and come together. And, yeah, the progress that people made just in 3 short days was absolutely tremendous. And we just had a lot of fun. And the ultimate gauge of whether a clinic is successful or not is it whether people had fun and the horses had fun, that the horses actually enjoyed it as well. So, you know, hopefully that gives people an inspiration and a perspective to what we're really doing and learning in our developing our skills with horses.
Okay. Well, Karen, we appreciate you joining us tonight. I can't, you know, time always flies by so fast. So
I know. It's the fastest hour of the month.
It is. It really is. So do you have anything you'd like to say for closing this evening? And
well, we solidified a date for another clinic here in Arizona. It's going to be in Tucson, and it's the third weekend in March. And we have a wonderful facility down in Tucson, so we'll be doing one more clinic here in Arizona down in the southern part of the state before it gets too hot, before our Arizona summer kicks in. So if anybody has the opportunity, if you want to get out of your cold weather area, we had, like I said, Stephanie flew in from Colorado. She got ahead she flew in just the night before that big storm hit in Denver. So she got out just in time and flew back Monday morning. And another very nice woman, Sandy, flew over from San Francisco area. She flew in from California, so, you know, and observed the clinic. And she was so glad to have the opportunity to come in and observe the clinic. And so, you know, don't limit yourself. You know, a lot of times people say, well, you know, when are you coming to, you know, my area? And, you know, when the desire is high enough, you know, when there's a will, there's a way. And I can't tell you how many times I've, you know, driven or traveled or flown in, you know, and continue to make that effort for my own personal development. You know, so don't think, oh, well, I have to wait till Karen comes here. You know, the DVDs are great learning, but, you know, get yourself there. And sometimes we even have horses available. Stephanie was able to arrange for a horse at the facility. So, you know, she came in and, you know, brought her equipment and brought some equipment, and, you know, she was able to use a horse for those 3 days. So, you know, if your desire is there, you know, you can absolutely make that happen. So, you know, it's like I told you, Melinda, you know, get selfish with your horsemanship. You know, make those things happen and keep after it. Keep pestering and, you know, working your way towards that. So possibilities are endless. You can make it happen for you and your horse. Do it for your horse.
That was probably some of the best advice you gave me, because I would have had always been mm-hmm. concerned of getting everybody else there, you know, and realized that's their responsibility to do that, you know, and they, and I wanted to give them that desire. They got to dig in and find that desire to want that. And once
right.
once you get a taste of it, it's like, okay, you want more.
Yeah, I know. All the, you get addicted to that feeling. Like you try something new and the horse gets it and does it, and you just go, ooh, man, that's hubba. But you know, the thing that I found, because I did the same thing, I spent a lot of years, you know, setting it up for other people and everything about other people. And then I went, wait a minute, you know, I need to put the time and attention into my horses. And rather than talking other people into something, what I found was much more effective is I develop my skills to a point people would see what I was doing and go, hey, how'd you do that? And I go, I don't know. And I'd be suspiciously quiet, you know, mm-hmm. and it make people crazy. It actually created more desire in other people when they saw what I was doing rather than me going along and not putting my time into developing my horsemanship, but putting my time into, you know, trying to talk other people into something. You know, I just went, hey, I'm going to take off. And somehow that creates the desire for people who want to aspire in their horsemanship. And I try to tell people, if I can do this, you can do this. You know, but I don't know that many people who have the kind of desire that I do, that you do, Melinda, that Stephanie does, that Sandy from, you know, it's just, you know, most people are happy reaching the height of mediocrity. And that's the truth, and that's okay. But that's not for me, and that's not for my horses. My horses deserve better, and, you know, in my opinion, all the horses deserve better. That's why I do what I do, you know, because if I'm going to help these horses that I love so much, you know, I need to have a giving heart and a generous heart to be able to, you know, help the people, you know. And if I can inspire people in some way and coach people and support people in these teleseminars and all the things that I do, and I appreciate what you do, Melinda, to host the teleseminars and all these things, you know. But I can only offer it. I can't experience for you. You have to step in and, you know, do that yourself. But if I make the learning process as enjoyable as possible and as affordable as possible and reasonable as possible, you know, let's go. You know, I'll be there for you. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Karen, we appreciate you joining us tonight. We thank everybody for submitting your questions. Please keep those coming. We'll, like I say, we'll get to them as soon as we can. So, and join us next month, and be March. We're almost into spring, Karen. Less than 40 days. I think it's like 40 some days. Yay. So everybody keep safe and tune in next month. And Karen, thanks for joining us.
All right. Thanks, everybody. And thank you for your questions.
Mm-hmm. Good night, everybody.